Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Andrew S. Paul. What's the S stand for?
It's actually my mother's maiden name.
Oh, really?
Statler.
Statler. As in, you know, I immediately think of those characters from The Muppets, just Statler and Waldorf. Do you remember them? And they were theater critics, kind of.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yeah,
those crotchety old guys
yeah,
that sat in the balcony.
Yeah, they're great.
Now, you can't tell me that every time you produce a show, you're not kind of looking out of the corner of your eye, you know, waiting for
looking
those.
Looking for Statler and Waldorf up there to give their critique.
But I did not know that. I'm learning things off the bat here. That's fantastic.
It's great.
You are the artistic director of Kinetic Theater of Pittsburgh.
That's correct.
It's kind of the new kid on the block here. We got a new theater company sprouting up.
That's right. As one of my friends said, you know, this is really great, Andrew. You start a new theater company every 6 months.
Is it true?
No. It's only the second one in a year.
Okay. Well, that's up there, you know.
Exactly.
Like Kinetic, you know, you are on the move. You are always...
But as I reminded him, you know, I did start Pittsburgh Irish and Classical Theater, and that company has been in existence for 18 years, the first 17 with me. So so I guess I deserve, after 17 years, starting two in a year, as long as I don't start a third in a year.
So you have planted things reasonable. That have taken root and grown. So that's on your
that's
resume.
Correct. That's correct.
And we hope to certainly see the same through Kinetic.
Now, absolutely.
First of all, how does one get the wild idea to start a theater company in Pittsburgh?
Well, that's a good question, because when I first came here in 1992, I came here and I trained as an actor in England, and I actually was in New York working as an actor, and I decided I didn't want to be an actor anymore. And I came to Pittsburgh because I could get really cheap in-state tuition at the University of Pittsburgh, and I have an economics degree from the University of Pittsburgh.
Well, you were thinking economically even to come here then. See, there you go.
Exactly. And I thought, well, that's the end of my theater career. And lo and behold, I arrive in Pittsburgh. Next thing you know, I'm doing a lot of acting. Mm-hmm. And then I started directing and producing. And next thing you know, I'm running $1 million company. So it kind of just
like
it just evolved. It's bizarre, you know. It just kind of, Pittsburgh was the right place for me. And because of that, even though I wasn't born here, I have such a strong affinity for Pittsburgh that I feel like it's my hometown.
Great. Now, you know, I have got to ask, because I've known a lot of directors, producers, actors, and individuals that do all three. You know,
right.
What was it that made you say, I don't want to act anymore?
Well, I think it was actually going to these cattle calls for commercial auditions where you'd have like 200 guys that look exactly like you. And you look up and down the row and you think, how am I different from any of these guys? And then I would just go, you know what? It's just pot luck. And mm-hmm. I would just give up. You know, and I think that was really frustrating, because, you know, you have this, when you're young, you have a very idealistic view of the business and an idealistic view of the world. And of course, you know, we all have to learn that it doesn't really work the way you'd like it to work. And I just found it really frustrating. When I was in New York City, it's a really expensive place to live. You know,
yeah.
I lived in a brownstone in Brooklyn in a little shoebox, you know, and I worked three jobs. And I just found it to be, not the city itself, because I really like it and I like living there, but I just found my life to be a little depressing. So Pittsburgh actually saved me in a lot of ways. So I was really happy to end up here.
And yeah, you've kept busy, you know. And now we have Kinetic blossoming with its inaugural production, Romance by David Mamet, which, you know, I those two, David Mamet and Romance,
exactly.
In the same sentence.
He's like the least romantic person.
Well, right. So what can you tell me
about this play and what attracted you to it as your inaugural production for Kinetic?
Yeah, well, I mean, the play should be called Bromance because there's no women in it. It's so funny.
Right.
Every person who I talk to about the play, they're like, well, who? I say, well, it's got David Whalen in it. It's got Patrick Jordan in it, Kevin Brown. Yeah, who's the woman? I said, there is no woman. What do you mean? It's called romance, right? Yeah, but there's no women. The romance isn't between a man and a woman in this case. But it's written by David Mamet, right? Yes, it is. So it's an interesting play, and it actually has... Romance is the major plot thread, if you can call it a plot thread, but the play is basically a courtroom farce. So a courtroom farce called Romance by David Mamet. It just seems completely...
And I think we need to mention that, you know, I am not just putting you on trial in this interview. We're on set. That's like a courtroom.
We're actually in the stenographer's box.
Oh, okay, not
the
like witness the
witness is actually
box.
On the other side.
Well,
I didn't want to tell
sense
you that
too, because stenographer's taking notes. We're recording this, you know.
Exactly.
But I love that, like, stereotypical courtroom drama.
Yeah.
You know, where like to Kill a Mockingbird, everybody's, you know, fanning themselves and they're in their big Easter hats and, you know, everybody's sweating.
Yep.
So I'm like living it up here. I'm really loving this. And in a minute, I'm going to go sit in the judge's seat because I've always wanted to,
hey,
you know, be there too.
That's the place to be. He's got the comfy chair too.
But no, this is great. And it's the Dance Alloy Studio on Penn Avenue. And when I walked in here, I mean, I really felt like this was a courtroom. I'm like, oh, gee, I never knew this was here. And then I'm like, oh, it's, you know, that's their set. But no, nice courtroom. Very Judge Judy. I like it.
It worked out really well because, you know, I came over to the space, and obviously it's not a space that's known for theater performances. It's really a dance studio. But what I loved about it, you have these really tall 18-foot ceilings where the grid is. And I feel like, I mean, I always feel like a space has to suit the play. And the idea of a courtroom play in a tightly closed space seems wrong to me. Lawyers need air to pontificate. And I think the space really works great for the play. And the audience is lined up on the side, so it's like they're in the jury box.
Yeah.
That's the idea. Anyway.
Yeah. Now, it's a little unusual because we're catching you as we sit and talk here now right in the middle of your run.
Right.
So how's it going?
It's going great.
Yeah,
it's going great. The show is a very wacky play. So it's not to everybody's taste because it is full.
Who doesn't like wacky? What do you mean it's not to everybody's taste?
It's very politically incorrect humor. However,
okay.
It is humor and it is pretty hilarious. And people find themselves laughing despite themselves at this play.
Well, I mean, you look at your poster. It's a lawyer with a leopard print briefcase satchel wearing no pants. So
pretty much says it all.
If you're
right?
Crying at this, it's going to be from laughter, probably.
That's right.
You gotta,
disorder in the court. That pretty much describes what you're going to witness when you come to see David Mamet's Romance. And it's a really interesting play because the play was written in 2005.
Uh-huh.
And when he wrote the play, the premiere happened at the Atlantic Theater Company off Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just at when the Middle East peace process was at its apex. It looked like there was going to finally be peace in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians. The two-state solution is underway. It's all going to be great. And then David Mamet writes this play, which is centered around a Middle East peace conference and the idea that these two characters in the play have for creating peace in the Middle East. And it's a comedy. And so the critics at the time said, well, maybe David Mamet's behind the times. You know, we're about to have peace in the Middle East. This play is meaningless. And of course, here we are, what? 8 years later, and we're as far away from peace as perhaps we've ever been in Israel and Palestine. So I think the play, I mean, this is totally accidental or incidental, but you know, I had no idea what was going to be happening over there in Gaza in the last week when we programmed the play, you know, 6 months ago. But in a way, it kind of, depending on your point of view, it adds to the interest for the play, and also I think in some ways adds to the effectiveness of the play.
Tell me about directing Mamet. Is there a certain approach you got to have?
It's really technical.
Yeah.
I mean, Mamet is kind of like Beckett and Pinter in that he basically, he's like a musician. He scores his plays. And so you really have to pay very close attention to how he structures the beats and the jokes. And you also have to find out what he means by pause, what he means by ellipses, because, you see, we all have ideas when we read other plays what we think a pause is, and a pause in Pinter is very different from a pause in Mamet. And you have to find out what those things mean for your company, and the cast gets to sit around, and we spend a long time kind of chewing this play over, because the play is really absolutely structured like a chamber piece of music, and each each one of our musicians, each one of our actors, performers, has to play their role to kind of create the overall effect. And you'll kind of see this when you see a performance of the play, because there are sections of it that are absolutely tightly structured that have to be played like a piece of music. And that can be a little frustrating, I think, for a director and actors, because you kind of feel like, what are we doing? We were just following his template here.
Yeah.
But if you follow his template correctly, it has an amazing effect, not only on us, but also on the audience.
So as a playwright, he's also kind of directing a little bit.
He is. He hates directors. He basically says that his plays would be better if nobody directed them.
Wow. Now, has he ever directed?
He does, and he's written books about directing and acting.
Wow.
Which is very interesting, because I think he's a lousy director. Now, I wouldn't tell him that face to face, but...
Well, you better hope he doesn't see this. He's going to show up in your jury box. He's going to put you on trial. Man, but let's just, it's safe to say there are a few things that David Mamet would not presume to teach us. You know, good.
Exactly.
So we'll look forward to seeing that, certainly. It sounds like an excellent time. So what is next for Kinetic Theater?
Well, we basically, our plans next is we're going to do two more plays. Mm-hmm. We're thanks to the beneficence of Richard E. Rao, who's sort of the angel of all Pittsburgh theater.
And I've got to get him on this show.
Exactly.
We need to get him in the witness stand here.
This would be a much poorer city if Richard Rao was not with us. And I'm not just saying that for your benefit, Richard, if you see this. But there's no question. I mean, he's a major benefactor and angel for nearly every theater company in the city, and also for dance companies, art institutions. I mean, he's everywhere, and he's so critical. But thanks to his beneficence and another gentleman, Fred Steinberg, who has a charitable foundation, we've set up a two-play residency over at the New Hazel Theater on the north side.
Oh, great.
So we're doing a play in the fall, and then another play the following spring of 2015. And I'm just in the process of trying to nail down rights for these plays. I'm trying to do some Pittsburgh premieres, but I can't say because I haven't nailed it down, and I don't want to have a slip of the tongue.
I got you. Well, you let us know when it's public.
Exactly.
And we will get the word out. Now, I have heard a rumor.
Okay.
Is it true that you are bi-coastal?
I am bi-coastal, and that's a strange position to be in.
Oh, yeah?
And basically, my wife is a physician, and I actually met her here. She did her residency and her fellowship at West Penn and then at Allegheny General.
I think if people are looking to meet physicians, Pittsburgh's a
good place.
Yeah,
absolutely. But my wife had trouble finding a job that really met her needs when she finished her fellowship here in Pittsburgh. So she widened her net at my behest, and she ended up getting a fantastic opportunity in the Southwest, which is a very large. She's a nephrologist, a kidney specialist, and the largest kidney private practice in the country is split between Phoenix and Las Vegas, and she's working for that firm. And it's a great place to work. And Las Vegas is like living on Mars. It's a very strange place.
How so? I mean, how so like Mars? I know it's strange, but I'm thinking, what is Mars like? Because it's just in the middle of nowhere and it's all desert?
Yeah, it's all desert. You wonder, it's not really fit for human habitation. People shouldn't be living there. There's no water.
I didn't think anybody really did live there. Well, other people just came and spent money and, did other
things. So did I. But there's 2 million people living in Las Vegas. 2 million. I don't know how many of them live there 12 months of the year, but there's 2 million.
Are there homes, around?
There are.
I guess so. If you work there,
there's tons of new building going on. I mean, they're expanding. I mean, there's two major residential areas in Las Vegas. This is probably not what you thought the subject of this interview was going to be.
But I'm interested, nonetheless. I don't care. This is my show. We'll talk about whatever I want. Let's talk about Vegas.
There's Henderson, which is sort of old Vegas, and then there's Summerlin, which is where we live, and that's basically new Vegas. And Summerlin is out by Red Rock Canyon, which is a beautiful place. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever lived. So when you sit on my back patio, we have a beautiful home there because real estate hit rock bottom right when we moved there. So, a shack in Pittsburgh will buy you a mansion in Las Vegas.
Okay.
That's my tip for the wise. But if you want to live in Las Vegas, and if you're a gambler, hey, you could do worse. But when you sit on my back patio, you look out, and we have all these beautiful, in the winter, you have all these beautiful mountains with snow caps. And it's just a beautiful place. I mean, it's kind of surprising to see snow caps because you're not expecting that either.
Yeah, it's true.
But it is really nice. And Red Rock Canyon, if you're into the outdoors and hiking or rock climbing, fantastic. One of the best places in the country.
So what's Pittsburgh got over Vegas?
Pittsburgh has arts and culture. Vegas has showbiz and gambling, but they don't really have arts and culture. Okay, and I think they're trying to develop arts and culture there,
really?
And maybe I can play my role in bringing some arts and culture to Las Vegas. But they have very little professional, what I would call legit theater in Las Vegas. What they have is they have a lot of musicals, a lot of casino shows.
Yeah.
Cirque du Soleil has about 9 shows going on there.
Bette Midler still?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cher. You get Elton John.
All right.
Celine. You know they're all there. Britney Spears has got an ongoing residency.
But you know what? They've all been through Pittsburgh.
Exactly.
They've all been here too. And we've got a casino now. So, you know.
You don't need Las Vegas, exactly.
Well, that's right.
This is Atlantic City's problem, but it's not really Las Vegas' problem. For some reason, Las Vegas is still immensely popular because I fly back and forth between Pittsburgh and Las Vegas, as you can imagine, quite a bit, and those planes are always full.
Huh.
Pittsburghers going down there to spend their hard-earned money in those casinos and going to those fancy restaurants and going to those Cirque du Soleil shows. So I know there is an appetite for that stuff.
Yeah.
But I would love it if Vegas could have a little bit more of a strong, with 2 million people, you think there ought to be a strong, legit theater community.
Well,
you know?
Now, is there a possibility of, in the future, taking a kinetic show from Pittsburgh and touring it over in Vegas?
Absolutely.
You just need to put everybody in sequins and feathers, and you got it. That's it. Can you see Mammoth?
Yes and no. Mammoth Goes Vegas. Yeah, we could totally rig the poster up, put a boa on the.
Actually, that kind of looks like a Vegas poster a little bit as it is.
It does a bit actually with the handbag, the leopard print. But no, I mean it's an idea that I've had for a while. I mean my main issue really with Las Vegas is not finding a space to be able to present a show.
Mm-hmm.
It's being able to afford to present a show.
Oh yeah.
Because. The chance is that it would take me a few shows to develop enough of an audience to actually be able to not lose my shirt in Las Vegas because I don't really have the sort of... I mean, I'm very lucky in Pittsburgh because I started Pittsburgh Irish and Classical Theater and I've lived here for most of 20 years. So I know a lot of people and I'm able to raise money and finance shows and pay people a living wage to work on these shows.
Good.
And down there, I'm not sure I could do that, but... Moving a show would amortize the cost and would make it more doable if it was the right project. So it's in my list of things I really want to make happen in the next 12 months.
I get the impression you enjoy the business end of the theater. Is this true or
is it? I do. Yeah. I'm kind of nerdy. I really like to study numbers and everything, and so I spend a lot of time poring over lists of donors and ticket sales and emails and trying to figure out, you know, where your audience is coming from, who you should be marketing to, why can't we get more people like that? And, you know, I find that really fascinating. And I've always had an interest in the business side of the business. But luckily, I'm an artist too, so I can combine both.
It's a nice
both
balance.
Parts. Exactly.
So with that in mind, what then is your approach to choosing future shows for Kinetic?
Well, it's obviously I'd like to do, I mean, my forte really is actor-driven plays of ideas. And I like to do plays that have nice ensembles of roles for actors so that you can, I mean, this company is a perfect example. Romance is a cast of 7. Every role is a gem. Everybody contributes to the whole. Like I said, it's like a chamber ensemble, these 7 guys, and they work beautifully together. And that's the type of work that I do well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I want to keep doing these sort of ensemble-based plays. The question is, how big can I produce? Because it took me a while to build up Pittsburgh Irish and Classical Theater so I could do the huge classical plays and afford to do them. You know, they have this joke in the theater. The guys that founded this very successful theater in London, the Almeida Theater, they retired after like 10 years on the job. And these two guys, it was Jonathan Kent and Ian McDermott. I'll never forget it because somebody asked them, they said, well, your theater is so successful. Well, what are you retiring for? You guys are not, you know, old, you know, and Jonathan Kent's response was, well, what people don't realize is even when you're successful, you're always 2 flops away from bankruptcy.
Huh.
And I think that's a really telling comment because I think that that is the nature of almost every theater I know. You cannot afford to have consecutive plays that do extremely poorly at the box office or you are dead in the water. And so you're pretty much, you can afford to have one turkey, and we all have our turkeys in our past, but you got to pretty consistently line it up and hit it out of the park. And I think that's one of the problems with choosing plays. And I think that's why, you know, if you look at the repertoire in the American theater, I think it's become increasingly limited and pared down. It's smaller cast, it's single unit set plays.
And that's economics. And I mean, yeah, exactly. People are writing for an economics.
That's it. And the same and the same plays are being done again and again and again all over the country. And you think, okay, well, can't people get out of this sort of mindset that they're in and think outside the box and put some stuff on? I mean, you look at a play like Romance, and this is a play. You can see why this play isn't getting a lot of air in the American regions, because, I mean, Mamet is making fun of Jews, he's making fun of Muslims, he's making fun of conservative Christians. He's, I mean, nobody is getting spared in this play.
Well, at least he's, you know, an equal opportunity insulter.
Yeah. Exactly. So nobody should be offended because he's offending everybody.
Right.
But at the same time, you can see why somebody who's a bean counter at one of these theaters will look at that play and go, good God, I'm going to offend half my audience if I put this play on. No, that plays out.
I think we have to laugh at ourselves, though. Yeah. I mean, isn't that kind of why we go to the theater, is in some way, shape, or form to see ourselves?
I completely agree. And, you know, I like to think of life as a comedy. I mean, Chekhov is my favorite play.
If we didn't, we'd cry.
Exactly. And you know, when life gets it at its lowest point, where you're feeling that it's the most absurd, it's when you laugh the hardest. And I think that that's, you know, that's my personal mantra. And I think that that's the type of theater I like, because I mean, theater that like this play that Mr. Mamet has written, I take back all those comments about your directing, David, are really important, because he is exposing the hypocrisy perhaps of our society, but he is allowing us not only to laugh at everyone else through the characters in this play, but to laugh at ourselves, because you're bound to identify with somebody in this play.
Well, good. So we come and identify with one of the seven. You know, the Magnificent Seven.
They are magnificent.
Yeah. Based on Seven Samurai, right? Am I going? Exactly. Is my film history correct?
Kurosawa.
Yeah. Old films.
Great.
You enjoy?
Stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of my hobbies.
There's a very good joke about black and white movies in this play.
Oh yeah.
I won't spoil it for you.
No,
I want you to come and see the play.
I want to come and see it too. And we've got how many more chances to do that? Because like I said, we're right in the middle of your run, isn't it?
Yeah, we got, let me think, we got about 9 more shows.
Okay,
nine more performances.
Plenty. Nobody has any excuse to miss this.
Come on out and catch this play.
Oh, good. Good. We're not only looking forward to that, but everything to come down the road from Kinetic. You know, the new kid on the block here, the feisty new firecracker theater.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you think there is a time of year that's better to do plays than others? I'm curious about this.
Well,
in Pittsburgh.
Well, you know, as I've said, I'm a bit nerdy about studying this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you specifically.
Well, let me tell you. I can say this because I'm no longer with Pittsburgh Irish and Classical Theater. When I was at PICT, I would say that our best months for producing theater, believe it or not, were December and August. That is hard to believe, but August is a fantastic month to do theater.
Really?
Yeah, there's almost nothing on. People are coming back and getting ready for the start of the school year, and they're in town. And so the last 3 weeks of August, great time to have a show on.
Huh.
This is my tip for the wise.
And December.
December, again, there's nothing on except for the Nutcracker and the Christmas Carol.
Well,
and so if you put on a good play the first 3 weeks of December, you will score. I guarantee it.
Because nobody else is putting on plays because they're thinking, nope, forget it. It's Christmas.
Nobody
Everybody's too
the
busy.
Theater.
Right. But meanwhile, people are looking to go to theater and there's nothing on.
Exactly.
Wow. So we need like a paradigm shift.
Isn't that interesting?
So are you going to be doing a show in December? Are you going to be doing a Christmas show?
No, but not necessarily. But you know, basically, I'm a vagabond now, so I'm basically trying to find slots and calendars at theaters.
Yeah,
that are
that's
heavily
the thing
booked.
Too.
So I'm kind of left to what's available. You know?
Do you feel that sports in Pittsburgh, because we're such a sports heavy town, dictates it a little bit too?
Yeah, I mean, I never really found that to be a handicap. You know, I never found, even when the Steelers were home and we had a 2 o'clock matinee and they had a 1 o'clock game, I never found that people stayed away from the theater en masse. I mean, also you have to remember, a lot of the audience for the arts is women. And even though there are a lot of women who like their Steelers games and their baseball games and their hockey games, I find that for the most part, people who have tickets do not not show up because of a sporting event. Now, well, they may have their phones out during the breaks in the play and be checking the scores and everything, but I think they generally show up and enjoy. They can enjoy.
Well,
the,
I like to think that Pittsburgh is just as dedicated to its sports as it is to its arts.
It
I
is.
Really do think, and
it
that is,
is
one of the
true.
Great things I have learned from hosting Berg Vivant, as I have. It's a great place to be.
It is.
And we're glad to have you when
it
we
is.
Do.
It absolutely is. I mean, if you look at professional sports, since we're on this topic,
yep.
I mean, if you look at Las Vegas, they have no pro sports teams there. I mean, they have a minor league hockey team. They have a minor league baseball team, which is like the AAA team for the New York Mets, of all people. And but apart from that, it's weird because of all the sports betting going on there, you would think, why wouldn't there be a professional franchise in Las Vegas?
Maybe
there,
conflict of
none.
Interest. I don't know.
I think that might be a big part of it.
Yeah.
But here we have pro football, we got pro baseball, we got pro hockey, and we don't just have teams, we have major franchises, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, particularly, you know, the Steelers are known all over the world. I mean, it's one of the first things. I mean, I travel all the time. You say you're from Pittsburgh.
Oh, Steelers.
Oh, the Steelers. And it's amazing to me how many people, that's the iconic thing about Pittsburgh, you know.
The day may yet come where they say, oh, Pittsburgh, Kinetic Theater.
Yeah,
so
right.
Cheers to that.
Absolutely.
Cheers to the
cheers.
Future, sir.
There we
indeed,
go. The
indeed, indeed.
Well, the Pittsburgh Symphony has an international reputation, of course.
Yeah. See, we're moving.
Mm-hmm.
We are. Pittsburgh is
exactly.
Kinetic, and
exactly.
Kinetic is Pittsburgh.
Exactly.
That's a good note to
Pittsburgh
end on.
Is a bit Kinetic. I think it's a good name for Pittsburgh. You like our tagline, theater that can't stand still?
Yeah, well, I think that's very true of everything that you've described to me.
Yeah, I have no idea what it means, but I like it because it just sounds cool, you know?
Well, theater that does stand still, what's that, kind of like Kabuki? You know, or Buto. Oh. Buto, they do that very slow kind of movement,
yeah,
right?
I know, is
that,
yeah.
I got to look that up.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of that, and I can't access it too much. Even Kabuki I found fascinating, but they play for like 6 hours. You know, if you go to Tokyo and you go to see a Kabuki performance.
Imagine paying those people.
I mean, people are eating in the crowd and they're talking to the actors. They scream at them. The guy next to me jumped out of his seat at one point. I thought, my God, I've never seen anything like it. But
you know what? We've not done that here.
No, I know. It's a shame because I mean, I would like to go back to the theater in the old days where, you know, the groundlings would sit there and start throwing the tomatoes at the actors.
Yeah.
They didn't like the play. They would talk back to the actors, give them a hard time. You know, I wouldn't mind a little bit of that. Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
Right?
What if we did like a Kabuki parody? Kaspoofy. Maybe.
Kaspoofy.
Oh, don't quote me on that, but
nice.
Yeah.
Maybe David Mamet would write it. He's got nothing better to
Has
do.
Has he offended Kabuki performers yet? I don't know. We'll find out.
He's an equal opportunity.
That's right. We covered that.
I'm sure he wouldn't have an issue with that.
Good. In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Berg Vivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.